And will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
Constitution of the United States. So help me God.
It is done.
History is strange. It's alien. And it won't give us what we would like to have.
Richmond Transmission and Auto Service, this hour's sponsor of the program. Glad you're with us on a Tuesday, this 30th of April, 2024. I'm Bill Mick Live. Dave does history in this hour, and we've had a fun morning so far. And we'll let you back into it in our final segment if you've got comments on today's Dave Does History. Before we go there, last hour for you to be able to register and potentially win and go with us to see Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes at Premier Theaters at the Oaks. Happens Saturday, May the 11th, 12:30 p.m. showing. Just hit up the talkback feature on the iHeartRadio app as you're listening to WMMB in this hour of the show. Give us your name, your telephone number so we can call you and tell you if you've won and that you want to go with us to Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Look forward to having a fun afternoon at Premier Theaters. Thanks to them for providing the tickets. Popcorn for two and drinks for two as you win this. You bring a friend along, and we will have a good time at Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, so that'll be fun. Dave, we're going to talk about George Washington in this hour, who I might refer to as the original New World Order guy.
Don't know why you would call him that.
Well, you know, weren't things all anew at that point in our country?
Yes, things were very, very new, which is, of course, part of the whole issue. By today, April 30th, 1789, when George Washington is inaugurated as the first president of the United States. And today we look at that and go, well, okay, great. Give it the big thumbs up, and nobody has any clue why that even mattered, let alone did it do anything. Keep in mind that on this day in 1789, there are still two states which have not ratified the Constitution. Technically, we're only 11 states on this day in 1789. North Carolina is just dragging their feet. They have the same arguments everybody else had, but they're not. They're just slow. I mean, I hate to say that about North Carolina, but being a South Carolina kind of guy myself, you know, it's easy to take that shot.
There you go.
Rhode Island is still being Rhode Island. You want to talk about sovereign citizens? Rhode Island has, from day one, refused to even consider ratifying the Constitution. They didn't send anybody to the convention. They refused to be a part of it. And they're basically putting their fingers in their ears and going, nah, 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 nah. And they will not ratify the Constitution for some time because they don't believe that it's legit. And we could spend hours talking about Rhode Island. Rhode Island is one of the more fascinating things about the Constitution of the United States. But Rhode Island and North Carolina at this point are not states. There's a lot of acrimony and problems in New York, even though New York is technically a state. It's going to be a problem for them. But all of this kind of fades away for a moment on that morning of April 30th, 1789, when George Washington steps to the balcony there in New York City, raises his hand, and takes the first oath of office.
We continue in 60 seconds on 92.7 FM WMMB. We're looking at the first presidential term of George Washington, inauguration day for him in 1789. And Dave, it sounds like we almost stumbled into this. It long war before this all came about, and still states are maybe not in a war mindset, but they're not all compliant either.
Oh, I don't know about that, not in a war mindset. Remember that just a year before this, Rhode Island called out its militia, 1,000 troops to break up a pro-constitutional rally in Providence. So
wow.
New York has a lot of issues going on. And you're right. nobody really has any clue what this is supposed to be. And in fact, if you read the original Constitution, you'll notice that there's a whole lot of stuff about how to elect a president, a whole lot of stuff about how to get rid of a president, but very little stuff about what does the actual president, you know, do. And nobody really knows this day. Even though Washington is unanimously elected, well, kind of. New York, the state of New York, casts zero votes for any candidate. Why, you may ask? Well, because they're still squabbling over the ratification of the Constitution. Even though they've technically ratified it, the problem is their House is controlled by what you would call Federalists, by Anti-Federalists, while their Senate, their upper house, is controlled by Federalists. And so you have this loggerhead. New York, the state of New York, the most successfully operating state in the Union at that point, can't get their stuff together enough to nominate, to appoint their electors. And by the time they get around to doing it, the election has already happened. And so New York actually casts zero votes in the election. The state of Maryland has two electors that nobody's really clear why, but they just decided not to cast votes. They showed up and went, nobody. And this is all going on against this background of this cantankerous argument that we've had for the previous year and a half over whether the Constitution should be ratified or not. And there's this lack of understanding. Imagine, you know, what we've been talking about for the last hour. How do you describe the presidency to somebody in 1789? What does the president do? Now, today you might have a different answer, but in 1789, what does he do? What's he supposed to do? At one point, Bill, we're going to have an argument about what do we call the president? And John Adams will suggest that we call him, quote, His Elected Majesty, unquote.
Ooh.
Which, of course, gets roundly mocked, including...
Yeah, I would think so.
Including referring to John Adams as His Rotundity, which is pretty funny, but...
I bet your Twitter blew up that day.
Can you imagine? That's one of the things I've always wanted to do, is talk radio in the 1700s. Wouldn't that have been...
Oh, yeah.
That would have been something else. The biggest problem that we have, though, Bill, is that since nobody really knows what any of this stuff means, and no one's had any input into what it actually says. I mean, there's words on a paper, but as we've talked about so many times, two people can read exactly the same words on a piece of paper and come to polar opposite conclusions as to what it means.
And so basically what you're telling me is it's up to Washington and his actions to define what this job is.
If he'll do that. And it's not clear at this point that he's going to do that. In fact, many will argue, Bill, that he doesn't even want to do it. How does this sound familiar? Does this sound familiar to you at all? Much of the country believes that he's only going to stay in the job for a couple of years and then step down. That sound familiar to anybody? I mean, it's much of the country believes that. The biggest problem that we have, and this is actually a letter that's written to Washington in July of that year, is that what is politically essential for a viable American nation, in other words, the things that we have to do, is ideologically at odds with what we claim we stand for. In other words, we claim one thing, sovereign states, sovereign this, but in order to make the government actually work, we can't do it that way. So which is going to win out in all this, and how does the president fit into all this? George Washington does not want to be president of the United States. He's made that clear, and he continues to make that clear over the course of his presidency. The vast majority of his correspondence as president, letters, writings, is actually to his staff back at Mount Vernon. How to trim a tree, how to dig this well, where to go. By far and away, That's the vast majority of his correspondence. He doesn't want the job, but he feels like, in many ways, as one of his biographers explains it, he has become more the legend than the man. And so he feels like he has to do this because the nation has put its confidence in him. And really, who else is going to do it? I mean, think about all the founding fathers and the framing generation. Who of those men really could have been the first other than Washington? And even as they're debating this presidential idea with Washington sitting there in the room, they all know Washington's going to be the first one. But who's going to be that second man? Who's going to be the second person up there doing it? Because that's the guy we're really writing this job description for. But as Washington steps out on that balcony, he has an inaugural address. And he will give that address. It's a very short address. It's only 1,400 words long. But in that, he will begin to establish the presidency of the United States.
We pick it up there in moments here on a Dave Does History edition of Bill Mick Live. Stay with us.
Our weekly dive into history. Dave Bowman joins us on Bill Mick Live.
And we get back into that look at George Washington on his inauguration day in just a moment. I'll remind you first, on the contest page at BillMick.com, your dream home makeover opportunities, actually four different contests for you. New roofing from Universal Roofing Contracting, bathroom remodel, and new flooring from The Best Floors and More, and a solar home battery from Sunwave Energy. You can enter in each of those on the contest page at BillMick.com. So good luck and go take care of that and win yourself a home makeover. Why not? Dave Bowman, you said this is a short inauguration. I wish more inauguration addresses were short. I mean, there's really nothing to be said. Hey, I won. We got work to do. See you in a few.
Yeah, I'm not really sure why they insist on them being so long, although some have been longer than others. That's for sure. Washington's initial inaugural address is only 1,400 words long. And it actually is surprising because it lacks a phrase that he had been using for several days before this. He keeps referring to the presidency as ground untrodden. And he'll use that phrase multiple times, but then it doesn't show up in his inaugural address, which it kind of makes you wonder. There are many people who believe that Thomas Jefferson actually wrote the speech for him, but who knows? It does seem to express a lot of what Washington would have believed. Like I said, 1,400 words. He opens the speech by expressing not his gratitude at being elected, but rather his reluctance at being elected and his humility. He feels like he's inadequate because this is a monumental task. And in many ways it is. Again, nobody really knows what the job is. And he's very Washingtonian, very humble about it, very expressing a lot of humility. Now, there are a lot of people who believe that Washington's humility is very Ciceroian in the sense that it's just a cover. He's just pretending to be this because he really wants
false
to be.
False humility.
This. Yeah, false, but not really false. Calculated is the way I would use it. Many people believe that he did the same thing when he was appointed as Commander-in-Chief of the Continental Army. He wanted the job, but he kept saying, I'm not qualified for it. But then when he showed up to talk about it, he showed up in full military uniform. So it's kind of like, well,
Did he ever suggest an alternative as to who might be a better president?
No. No.
Okay, so that maybe that bolsters what you're saying.
But, again, a lot of people believe that in 2 years he's going to be gone, and there's some reasons why they believe that. He does express gratitude and for the trust that's placed in him by the people of the United States. He acknowledges his responsibility to uphold the Constitution and the law of the land. Now, this is important because, again, this has just been ratified, and in fact, in 2 states, it hasn't been ratified. So
Right. He's
reminding people that the Constitution will be here. He does appeal to divine providence. Washington highlights the intervention of divine providence in America's independence and government formation, and he invokes his God's guidance in the nation's endeavors. You wouldn't get that from a president today. I doubt seriously that they would even understand the words that Washington used, but you get the idea. He goes on to discuss the framework of the Constitution, and this is important because it's just been ratified. People are still kind of learning what's in it, even though they've been arguing about it for a year and a half. It's clear that the government itself doesn't completely understand what's in it. What does this mean? What are we going to do about this? But he wants to make it clear that the principles it embodies as safeguards for our liberties and rights are going to be maintained. And this is something that he has already said once, and now he's going to say it again, because he really, really wants them to understand that this is important, and even though we don't know what we're doing yet, we're going to figure it out.
Without I guess they have an understanding of the principles in play, Dave, but they've not seen them implemented, and it's up to them now to implement them and do this well.
Oh, they don't.
It's got to be a daunting challenge.
They
right?
have no idea what this is supposed to be. There has never been anything like this in the history of the world. And remember, these are people, James Madison, Benjamin Franklin, others, who have studied governments from around the world and throughout history. And they have no clue what this is supposed to be. In fact, as I said, they know how to elect one. They know how to get rid of one. But they don't really know what he's going to be other than commander-in-chief because, you know, there you go. They even talk about advice and consent of the Senate, right? With the advice and consent of the Senate. Well, what does that mean? Anybody know? I mean, today, what does it mean? Today, it means that the Senate, the president makes a nomination or a recommendation, and the Senate debates it and goes for it. But in 1789, on April 30th, nobody has any clue what that means. They're going to find out in about a year.
Take the words at what they are, and it's like before the president acts, he's got to meet with these folks in the Senate and see what the consensus is.
Well, that's what you would think the words on the page mean, right? We're going to find out, like I said, in about a year. Washington goes on with his speech. He calls for unity. He wants the unity among the states, the people, fostering the success of the federal government. And this is, you know, it sounds like one of those typical political speeches, but remember, 1789, there's about a good 40% of the country that didn't think that this Constitution thing was a good idea. And in fact, 2 states still have not ratified it. We need unity. He talks about the need for a wise and prudent government that ensures justice, maintains peace, supports foreign relationships, provides for defense, and fosters the general welfare. Interesting. It ensures justice. Keep in mind, at this point, according to the Constitution, who appoints the justices? Well, the president, with the advice and consent of the Senate. Well, he's just starting today. There is no judiciary yet. He also goes on about the public opinion, the importance of public opinion. He wants the public to be involved in the governance of the country. He wants them to advocate for transparency and responsiveness in government. When's the last time you ever heard a president of the United States say that? He talks about personal integrity. Not since Washington. He assures the people that he will serve with integrity and dedication without any personal gain, and he wants to return to his private life without any rewards at the end of his service. And then he closes with a prayer. It's not a prayer that we would recognize today as a prayer. It's not what you're going to hear on Sunday morning. He just wants God's blessing for the country's success on the government and the people of the United States. And that's it. Everybody says, yay. They turn around, they go back out, and now we got to figure out what we're going to do from here.
The answer is, what do we do? Yeah, or the question is, what do we do now?
And that first term, the first year of his presidency, is not going to do much. They're just going to kind of appoint justices and, you know, do some things, but nothing huge. But boy, those last 3 years of his first term are going to be filled with controversy, arguments, and even a well-known future president of the United States kind of bad-mouthing President Washington. And you'll be surprised.
So it was politics as usual then.
Pretty much. Politics as usual.
It's his fault. He started it all. Dave Bowman with Dave Does History. We'll get to your calls as well in our final segment of the day here on Bill Mick Live. Auto Service, this hour's sponsor of the program. Good to have you along as we wrap up Dave Does History on a Tuesday. You want in with Dave, it's 321-768-1240. Before we get back to George Washington being inaugurated and giving that inaugural address and now going to work, remind you, your last chance, the next 20 minutes or so, to get your entry in via the iHeartRadio app with a talkback call. Give us your name, your telephone number, and you want to go see Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes with us, courtesy of Premier Theaters at the Oaks. We will select winners at random from those entrants. You got another 20 minutes to get your call in, and we'll put you on the list. We'll divvy up the numbers and draw them at random, and good luck. I'd like to see you go with us. I think it's going to be a fun movie series. So Washington gives what sounds like, Dave, a very good inaugural address that was not too long either. And now he faces going into the job that nobody's ever done.
And that's really the point of all this, isn't it? He stands there this day, April 30th, 1789. Nobody has any clue what's supposed to happen. And for about a year after this, very little does happen. Now, there's some reasons for this. We tend to think, well, okay, they were just trying to figure it all out and they were talking it through, but that's not really what happens. In June, a couple of months from now, George Washington will come down with a tumor in his thigh. And the tumor is so big and so painful and so dangerous that it has to be surgically removed. And of course, nobody knows about this until many years later after his death. But there is a great deal of concern that this tumor is going to kill him just months after he becomes president of the United States.
Wow. Well,
his recovery from this it's problematic, and it starts to affect his constitution. Even George Washington, the man who for 8 years led the Continental Army in the field, starts to realize that he's not as strong as he used to be physically. And in May, the following May, he comes down with influenza. And the influenza is so bad, the flu is so bad, that they really think that he's got, in fact, they stop traffic on the streets of New York because they don't want the noise of the carts rolling by to disturb President Washington, who's trying to recover from all this. And it's these two illnesses that leave Washington physically much weaker than he used to be that cause Thomas Jefferson, yes, that Thomas Jefferson, to begin to spread the rumor that Washington isn't going to last. He's only going to be here a couple of years. His mental capacity has been strained by these two illnesses, and he's just not up to the job anymore. That rumor is spread by Thomas Jefferson, who probably has some political arguments. Remember, he and Hamilton used to butt heads all the time. Hamilton is Washington's best friend. They're both in the cabinet, which the president has spent the year forming. The cabinet, of course, is something that's never happened before either. He's been trying to figure out how to get this judiciary thing working. And of course, there's that Bill of Rights thing out there that Congress is working on. This compromise that was made by most of the states in order to get ratification. We got to get that through. What's going on with that? We've got Hamilton's plans for funding and assumption of the debt, the Revolutionary War debt. The states gets combined into the federal government. And with that, you have the First Bank of the United States, which Hamilton pushes through and Washington agrees with. It's one of the things that I ask people when they tell me that the Bank of the United States is a bad idea. Well, George Washington didn't think so. What do you know that he doesn't know?
Mm-hmm.
Never really a question there. He also has to work on the Residence Act, which is the idea of what will become eventually Washington, D.C. Where are we going to put the capital of the United States? There's a tariff act involved. There's wars on the frontiers that the British are still encouraging. That's kind of problematic. There's this neutrality of the United States when France and England get into fights again, the United States, which theoretically should be friends and allies with France, but Washington declares neutrality. And that upsets the people that are pro-France, which of course includes Jefferson. And along in all of this, Bill, comes something that very few people know about called Fry's Rebellion. And Fry's Rebellion is a tax rebellion that takes place in Pennsylvania. It's a direct protest against federal taxes imposed by the United States government. Does this sound familiar to us after hour two? It was named after the guy, yeah. John Fry's, who's a local auctioneer. He's the leader of the insurrection. And it was about discontent with the federal taxes on houses, land, and slaves. And it's part of this whole process. And the problem that they have is that the people that are put in charge by Washington of collecting this tax are religious, conscientious objectors, Quakers and likes that, people who did not fight during the Revolutionary War. And all of a sudden, they're in charge of collecting the taxes. Part of the taxes are based on how many windows you have in your house, which, of course, that's kind of a silly thing to us, but in that era was a big deal. In fact, you can go to London today and see buildings where windows are bricked up because people didn't want to pay taxes on the windows.
Wow.
And this whole thing is almost a sovereign citizen movement. You don't have the right to do this to us. And it has to be solved. And eventually the presidents end up pardoning. It's actually more into Adams's term before that gets done. But they end up pardoning these folks for doing all these things. These are all things that he has to face. And I think of all of those things, for me, the idea that Thomas Jefferson, who is one of, you know, the framers that we, framers and founders, we put upon the pedestal. But to see Thomas Jefferson as that petty, and by the way, I think this is tomorrow is the day of the Louisiana Purchase, which Jefferson is a big part of. But to see Jefferson in that petty of a mode where he's backstabbing the president over his illness. The president, by the way, has to figure out this advice and consent thing. And George Washington has a treaty he wants the advice and consent to the Senate on. He goes to the Senate, walks in the door, says, "I'm here for advice and consent." And the whole thing degenerates into a huge shouting match, argument. And Washington storms out. And no president since has ever gone back to the Senate to ask for advice and consent. They've just sent it to them because why should we bother? Washington tried.
Otherwise, we'd have Parliament. Yeah.
Yeah, he tried, but it just didn't work. When you consider all that he got done in establishing this whole thing, everything from how do you address the president to how does the president interact with people? Do you bow to him? Do you shake his hand? They end up having a weekly open house kind of thing where Washington literally just stands there and doesn't say a word, which upsets a lot of people because, well, we got to see him, but we didn't really get to talk to him. And people have this mindset that if you're in a situation like that, you have to communicate, you have to talk, and Washington doesn't feel that way. All of these things had to be worked out. These things that we see now, state dinners, correspondence dinners, none of these things existed. And it was George Washington who, above all that, above all the arguments, above all the criticism, against all the backstabbing, against all the problems that you had with the British, you know, encouraging the Indians to attack, and even tax rebellions, George Washington stands tall. But believe me, by the end of his second term, he will have had enough. And that's why I always say second terms are a disaster, because even for George Washington, it did not go well.
321-768-1240 if you went in on this remembrance of George Washington. So a lot to deal with. The weight of this job, Dave, 8 years in it is enough, no doubt. And look at how presidents tend to age, maybe quicker than they would otherwise, just by being in the job and dealing with everything that's there.
It's crazy. I mean, you know, Washington goes into this job, literally has no idea what he's supposed to do. Nowadays, presidents go into this job and they think they have to do everything. Or maybe not. I don't, you know, you look at recent presidents and you wonder energy levels and those kinds of things and, you know, the politics of it all. And I come back to, we tend to over-glamorize these founding framing generations. In fact, we have a painting in the capital of the in Washington, D.C. called The Apotheosis of George Washington. The making of him as a god hangs in our capital. And we tend to put these guys on pedestals. And when you realize that they were just human beings, just like you and me, Washington maybe a little more standoffish, a little more serious than I or you, but for the most part, politics was politics. And I think for Washington, he loses Ben Franklin. Ben Franklin dies early in his first term and right after his illnesses. So you go through that, Ben Franklin dies. You know, who does he have left to lean on other than Hamilton, who's his good friend? But even Hamilton is into it with Jefferson. They're conspiring behind his back. And it's what, you know, it's why Washington's going to warn about parties later on, because, you know, he's seeing it happen. He's watching this happen.
No doubt. Quick phone call before we're done for the day. Line one, you're on Bill Mick Live. Good morning.
Morning. What I'm hearing here is that indeed this presidency was the absolute last thing they had in mind was anything close to a king or royalty and that court, that sort of thing. And something just occurred to me. The Israeli government, that's one of the most, as far as I can tell, that's very close to the kind of government that we saw in this country back in, you know, the late 1700s. Very down to earth, straightforward. No one is above the law. No one is a king and so forth. Anyway, I really enjoyed this discussion.
Thank you, Mario. We do appreciate it. And we're about time to head out of here. Dave, how well's the example been followed? And what do we really think we want to do?
Well, I would say not very well at all. But then again, you know, the big fear that they had, as Mario mentioned, was the specter of a monarch, that this could become a monarchy. Right. And I think in many ways, John Adams may have gotten it right, because that's kind of how we see the president today, isn't it? His elected majesty.
Yeah, kind of.
It bothers me, but I don't know that I can do anything about it. So.
Well, we may not be able to. Except go vote, Brody.
Which is what George Washington would have encouraged you to do, Brody. George Washington said vote. What do you know that he didn't know?
Yeah, there you go. Dave, appreciate you getting up and even through your knee rehab and joining us on these Tuesdays. Have a good week, buddy, and get that knee healthy, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday here.
We'll look forward to it.